world continues to mourn the loss of one of the 20th century's greatest moral leaders. Heartfelt tributes have been pouring in all weekend for Nelson Mandela, the man of peace and reconciliation, who changed the face of South African politics and who inspired hope around the globe. Let's get started here on Question Period.
Canada, a nation Mr. Mandela honored by becoming its first ever, our first ever, honorary citizen, mourns with you and with the entire world today.
It is a rare individual whose reputation for wisdom transcends time.
Mr. Speaker, he was, most of all, a metaphor for hope.
Canadian politicians joined the chorus of mourners around the globe, paying their respects to the late Nelson Mandela. Mandela always held Canada in high esteem for the strong stance we took against apartheid. Brian Mulroney defying the wishes of his Western counterparts at the time.
If there is no progress in the dismantling of apartheid, our relations, those of Canada with South Africa, may have to be severed absolutely.
The former Prime Minister will join us on his relationship with a South African legend. And former Governor General Mokgal Jean reflects on the lasting legacy of Madiba. Plus, another fallen soldier on home soil. A Canadian Forces vet takes her concern to Parliament Hill.
World leaders are making their way to South Africa. Our Prime Minister will be heading there with three former Prime Ministers, including Brian Mulroney, who will join us momentarily. Tens of thousands of South Africans have been flocking to churches across the country to remember Nelson Mandela. Today has been declared a National Day of Prayer. Joining us from Johannesburg, CTV correspondent Tom Kennedy. Tom, from the pictures we see of people dancing in the streets today, it looks like we're witnessing a celebration rather than mourning of Nelson Mandela's life.
Well, it's a bit of both, isn't it, Bob? I mean, the music, the rhythms, the dancing, it's very much a part of the culture of South Africa. So we're seeing a great deal of that. But also, there's no question this country is genuinely deeply in mourning. And they're showing it any way they can. They are targeting, or at least they're going to places. They want a place to go to express this sense of mourning and celebration for Mr. Mandela's life. And one of the places they've been going to is at his house here in Johannesburg, just in a not that far from here, actually. And it's an extraordinary scene. There are hundreds, perhaps a thousand or two people there constantly, and they've been there since Thursday night when Nelson Mandela died. But we're only seeing the beginning of this, Bob. I think there is going to be a spontaneous and unscripted outpouring of emotion and celebration of Mr. Mandela's life. It is just beginning now. I think we're going to see some extraordinary scenes here over the next few days.
Tom, it's Sunday morning here in Canada. Are the South Africans ready to host hundreds of world leaders on Tuesday?
Well, that's a key question, isn't it? It's been said that the largest gathering of statesmen and stateswomen ever in history was at the funeral of Pope John Paul II in Rome. But they're saying what is going to happen here over the next few days, it's going to surpass even that. Now, this would stretch the infrastructure of any country. South Africa, I mean, the question is there, are they going to be able to control this and keep a lid on it? Is security going to be able to handle all the various demands? The other problem they're going to have, Bob, is that so much of what's happening is unpredictable. It's completely unscripted, completely spontaneous. These are the gestures of mourning and celebration of Mr. Mandela's life by 50 million people, and it's impossible to control, I think, everything that's going to be happening here.
Now, before Mandela passed away, there was infighting among his children over money and where to bury him. Has this been resolved?
We don't know. Certainly a lot of the South African press are writing about this. They're keeping an eye on it. The funeral plans in Mr. Mandela's home village, the funeral is going to be there on Sunday. The final planning for that final funeral has been handled by his family. And we're watching, and in fact the South African media watching very closely to see if there is going to be any familial infighting. And of course, we also have to watch what's going to happen afterwards. This is still a very, very troubled country. A lot of people flocked to South Africa from neighboring countries, thinking that this was the promised land after the end of apartheid. That promise was never fulfilled. This is still a country with very high unemployment, very serious problems with poverty, a huge gap, one of the largest gaps in the world between rich and poor. So the other thing we're going to have to look at in the weeks and the months following the funeral of Mr. Mandela is how this country is going to manage with the father figure, as he's called in this country, after the father has died.
Thank you very much, Tom. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Bob.
No other world leader stood so steadfast against apartheid. Brian Mulroney took on his own conservative soulmates, Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, in his fight to free black South Africans and to pry open the prison door of Nelson Mandela. Mandela never forgot what Mulroney did. The first country he visited after he was freed was Canada. Joining me now from Toronto, former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. Mr. Mulroney, when was the last time that you saw and spoke to Nelson Mandela?
The last time, Bob, was a few years ago in Cape Town. Emile and I were there on business. I was on the board of Independent News and Media, which owned a number of dailies in South Africa. And we used to visit him and Grace fairly regularly, and we spent a day together. I'm going to say maybe 3 years ago or so. That was about the last time. And then he went, as you know, his health went into sharp decline.
Former UN Ambassador Stephen Lewis said that when he used to see Mandela a lot, he used to say that he was almost obsessive about asking about you because he was so respectful of what Canada did to help in the fight against apartheid.
Well, we became pretty fast friends, and I think he understood that I felt, Bob, that when we came in 1984, that Canada's activities in this area had been fairly tepid. And we had to move our game up pretty quickly. And so we decided to focus on President, or Mr. Mandela as he then was, Mr. Mandela and South Africa and apartheid as our number one priority in the area of human rights and foreign policy. And to that end, we used the G7, the Sommet de la Francophonie, the Commonwealth, and the United Nations nonstop. And the message quickly went through to President Mandela, in jail at the time, that there was a new game in town in Canada, and that we took this very seriously, as did all Canadians. And we were able to do it only because of the tremendous support we received from across Canada. So I think that's what he remembers when he speaks so fondly to Stephen Lewis and others about us.
But you did have opposition in Canada as well, not obviously from the Canadian people, but the banks and major oil companies had a lot of investment dollars in South Africa and were lobbying you not to do so with the sanctions.
We had some opposition even within the party, if truth be known. And we had opposition in other areas of society, and the South African ambassador lived right across the street from 24 Sussex. Every morning when I got up, I'd look outside and I'd see the residents, and I'd get angry, and I'd be angry when I saw him before I went to sleep at night, because it was just a symbol of such significant evil against other human beings. I mean, it's hard to remember, although you were with us, Bob, on a number of these trips, it's hard to remember that in one's lifetime you could see a situation where 3 or 4 million whites dominated 25 or 35 million blacks, stripped them of their rights, stripped them of their property, stripped them of their dignity and their decency, and treated them like slaves. And this was going on until Mr. Mandela was freed. So we had a lot of energy behind us in Canada, because Canadians knew that we were fighting a fight that had to be fought and won.
Well, what was it like when you were dealing with Ronald Reagan? I know you were very close friends, but he didn't have much time for Mr. Mandela, and certainly not for economic sanctions.
Well, you're right. He was a lovely man, as you know. But on this issue, we really had to agree to disagree. Both he and Mrs. Thatcher would take the position that, well, Brian, Mandela's a communist. And I would say, well, and how would you know that? He's been in jail for 27 years. Did he call you up and tell you this? How do you know? The fact of the matter is that if he's receiving support from communist governments around the world, it's only because you're not helping him. And I said, if I were in jail for 27 years and a communist government supported me, I'd support them in return on behalf of my fellow South Africans. So we had, I think there was a blind spot there in the case of President Reagan and Prime Minister Thatcher. Not that they supported the system there in any way, but they felt there was a different way to go about it. Although when I disagreed with them, I said, well, we're going to find out when President Mandela comes out, and he'll tell us what he thinks of all of this. And in his first comments when he came out, as you know, in the comments he made in Ottawa, he said, keep the pressure on with the sanctions. This is the only thing that's going to bring this regime down. And indeed, we did, and it happened.
Now, Mr. Maroney, looking at South Africa today, and now that Mandela's gone from the scene, are you at all concerned that this fledging democracy could falter and leave, after the legacy of Nelson Mandela?
Well, he was such a magnificent man. He came out having spent 27 years in jail, and his message was one of reconciliation, no vindictiveness, no mean-spiritedness, no reprisals, sunshine in his smile and love in his heart. That's what transformed South Africa, and that's what helped Africa, the continent, so much. If that ever changed, and you saw what happened in recent years in Zimbabwe, if that ever changed, I suppose there could be a different perception of South Africa. But I think the roots that Nelson Mandela sowed are deep enough and secure enough for South Africans to realize that what he wanted for them was happiness, prosperity, education, health care. He wanted a better life for them. He wanted freedom. And you get that in these circumstances by building a new country and not by fighting with your neighbors or fighting with people on the basis of race or religion within. So I'm confident about the future because of the tremendous legacy that he left, Bob.
Well, Mr. Maroney, I want to thank you for taking some time to speak to us. And I know that tonight you'll be flying with the Prime Minister to South Africa for the funeral. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Former Governor General Makhaal Jean, like so many Canadians, admired and loved Nelson Mandela from afar. He stood for equality, freedom, and reconciliation. She remembers how she rejoiced the day he walked out of Robben's Island after nearly 30 years behind bars. Ms. Jean joins me now. You did go and visit Robben's Island. He wasn't there, of course, then. What were your feelings when you went into that island and those prisons?
I was in South Africa at the time in my capacity as Governor General of Canada. And part of my program was also, to visit Robben Island, and I was supposed to meet Nelson Mandela on that same day. Unfortunately, he wasn't feeling well. His health was already, declining, and I was saddened by the fact that I wouldn't meet him personally. But at the same time, being in Robben Island, where he had spent in that space of confinement so many years, gave me the reality of the sacrifices and what he had suffered, because it was a space of confinement. That small cell where he was imprisoned. But I came out of there with such a headache. I had a terrible headache. And the South African minister who was accompanying me saw my face, touched my hands, I had cold hands, and she said, I know exactly what you are experiencing right now. You're angry, aren't you? And I was very angry indeed from what I had seen and understood. And she said, I'm going to share a story with you of how Nelson Mandela helped us overcome that anger. And she told me the story of when, in 1994, as they were negotiating the one person, one vote, the right for blacks and colored in South Africa to vote, And she said we were hundreds of the ANC gathered in that room and strategizing, and all of a sudden some activists arrived inside and said that four of our comrades had been gunned down by the police. And she said, we were so angry. We wanted to go out, walk the streets, and burn, and explode everything. And Nelson Mandela spoke, Madiba spoke, and said, no, we are not going to do this. We will set an example, really. And we will win, because they were certain that they were going to win. The ideas, the ideal, you know, had triumphed over barbarism, you know, over the apartheid. And Mandela was able to tell them that what they had to build is something bigger than themselves, bigger than that moment of anger and furor, something like a constitution that would be one of the most, you know, inclusive in the world, a democracy that would be completely inclusive. And this is, I think, one of his most remarkable legacies.
Do you fear in some ways that the leaders who have preceded him have failed to live up to his example?
I think that, you know, Mandela really established the con-